So, welcome everybody. We're once again day two of the Bitcoin conference in Amsterdam. I have the most honor, biggest honor to be sitting with Mark Moss. Mark is an investor, an entrepreneur for the past 25 years, a content creator, an expert in economics, finance, and in my eyes, should hear that, a teacher and a mentor for navigating the world through the lens of money. You may not know that, but you are one of the main sources of knowledge and wisdom in the past couple of years for me personally. And through
Thank
you,
you.
I entered the world of gold, Bitcoin, and understanding the fiat currency system and its failures, even more important, using a very sensible, evidence-based approach. So I thank you for that
Oh, wow,
because
that's
you have
awesome.
been my, really, I think, one of my first mentors to that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was red-pilled and starting to understand what's happening around the world. And very quickly, I got into the money question. So, what's going on with money? And then you were the one providing a lot of answers for me.
I'd love to hear that.
So really, thank you for that. And here I am sitting in a
Yeah, no,
Bitcoin
I love it. I
conference.
love it.
That's your impact, you
One of
feel.
the American founding fathers, Samuel Adams, he said, it doesn't take a majority to prevail, but rather a small, irate minority keen on setting brush fires in the minds of men. And so I try to say that often, and I try to think about that. So to hear that
Here's your.
maybe my brush fire has started you and you're doing this, I mean, that's just amazing.
Exactly. I'm telling you that for sure. Like 3 weeks ago, I was speaking in a conference in Israel to 350 people that have no clue about what the fiat system is, what gold is, what Bitcoin is. And I shared that knowledge that I gained a lot from you and from other sources with those people,
That's awesome.
and it's opened their heads to it. So your impact has all these layers of influence, a lot more than what you know and what you see. So I'm
Thank
sharing
you.
this with you so you understand. Last night we had a really good conversation, and I found Mark to be one of the most compassionate, humble people that I knew. So thank you for it. Like
Thank
on
you.
top of everything else, and that's really a treat. So okay, yesterday at the conference, you had a conversation on stage with Peter Saintonge, right? About the fourth turning in Europe. Can you, and I just want to quote here from the book of Neil Howe and William Strauss. They published a book called The Fourth Turning, which describes a four-generation cycle of renewals, stabilization, decline, and crisis in Anglo-American history. Each generational turning takes about 20 years, so a complete cycle takes roughly 80 years. I'd love you to share a bit with us the key insights from your talk yesterday with Peter about
Yeah,
that.
we were talking about Europe's fourth turning, which three Americans up there talking about Europe's fourth turning. But I think it's relevant because, to your point, it's about a cycle. And so in the book, it talks about an 80-year cycle. They call it a saeculum. It's about typically the average lifespan, if you will. And it's four 20-year cycles. I love cycles. I talk a lot about them. It's about 80. So I look at like an 84-year cycle. 3 times 84 is 252. So a 200-year cycle is an even bigger one, and that's the one that we're in right now. But back to the fourth turning,
We're in the bigger one of the
we're in
250.
the third 84-year cycle, so it's a 250-year cycle right now. But in that, the reason why it makes sense is that people think that history moves linear, but it doesn't. It moves exponential because we're building new technologies on top of the old ones, and so things are changing very rapidly. But as much as things are moving exponentially, changing exponentially, they also stay the same because we're humans. And so human nature moves cyclical. And so it's almost like we're repeating as we're moving up exponentially at the same time. And so you could think of
Two
it
different types of energy,
two di
energies. Like
yeah.
one is escalating, the other one is like
Right.
spiraling through it.
Right. But as much as they change, they stay the same sort of thing. And the reason why is because we're humans and human nature. And so what happens is we typically take things too far. We're like, oh shoot, too far. So let's go back. And then we correct too far, and then we correct too far. And it's sort of like a bowling ball just kind of
A
correcting itself.
pendulum, yeah.
A pendulum, exactly, right? Specifically in the fourth turning, it's what's called generational theory. so that each generation is different than the generation before them. And we've heard this many times, like those who have been in war hate war, but the sons don't know anything about it. They dream of war, kind of a thing, right? And so in this, the fourth turning, and it's been sort of turned into meme culture, which is the hard times create strong men. Strong men create great times. Great times create weak men. Weak men create bad times. And the bad times create strong men. And so it's like this cycle. An anecdotal story is that we're here in the Netherlands. My father's side of the family came from the Netherlands, immigrated to the United States. And my grandfather was a farmer in middle America, early 1900s. Very, very hard work to be living on a farm at that time. Anytime, but especially at that time. So hardest worker ever. My father was the oldest of five children, and he had to work on the farm, and my grandfather would like loan him out to other farms, help bring in the crops. So crazy hard worker, but he left the farm. My father did, right? He left the farm and he went into construction, and he's the hardest worker I've ever known. He wasn't as hard as my grandfather because he left the farm. He's the hardest worker I've ever known. And he made me go work construction with him when I was a kid, which has given me a crazy work ethic. But I swore to myself, I would never do a job I had to get dirty at. So I hated that. And so I've left. And now my kids, like, they don't even know what work is. So that's four generations. Now back to sort of this talk, we talked about Europe's fourth turning. I think you can look at the United States and Europe sort of kind of, and the developed world, if you will, the West,
yes,
has sort of synced up. And it's because of what happened at World War II, which was about 80 years ago.
Exactly.
78 years, whatever you want to look at it. From the Bretton Woods Agreement in 1944, when the monetary order changed, it's been about 78 years, about 80 years. And so the world sort of synced up. So I believe the Western world is in this period right now where we've seen these four cycles. In the book, Four Turning, it highlights that the last turning is where all the change happens. So Vladimir Lenin is famously quoted saying that there's decades where nothing seems to happen, and there's days where decades seem to happen. And so that's sort of where we're at. That's why this whole world is changing so fast. So that sort of frames it up where it is. One more sort of example, I think, is just Europe overall, but really Germany. So Germany got hit probably the hardest after World War II because of the reparations they had to pay and the hyperinflation they experienced in Weimar Republic, et cetera. And those people went through an extremely hard time. They were literally burning cash in their fireplace because the cash was worth less than the wood was. Extremely hard. So they had to rebuild their entire country, and they had to come out of debt, and it was very, very difficult. The hard times created very strong men. And those strong men created really good times. And Germany became the economic engine of Europe. They led Europe in manufacturing, precision manufacturing, things like that. And even still to this day are sort of this economic driver of the entire European continent. That was 80 years ago. However, today, the weak men have created really, really bad times. And so they've decided to shut all their energy off.
Yes.
Let's just turn all our nuclear reactors off. And let's just become, let's forget natural gas. We won't get it out of the ground. We'll just get it directly off of other strong men in Russia. Donald Trump warned them of what would happen, and here we are. And now Germany is in a situation where they're now deindustrializing. Their manufacturing base is moving away, and they don't even know what to do. They're still trying to shut their energy down. They put nuclear reactors back on temporarily to get them through, and then they decide to shut them off again. Now they're burning trees and wood and coal again. And so I think that's just a good example of 80 years. These different cycles, and sort of just the last thing I'll say is this generational cycle, is that you get to a point, the weak men, they are so disconnected from how the world works and how value is made. They're eating from food that they never planted or grew, right? And so they don't even know how the world works. Like, oh, let's just shut down our energy. What do we need that for?
We have a supermarket. With commercial food waiting for us.
Exactly.
Came from we don't know where and we don't care.
We don't know where. And even in the United States, and like I said, it's really the West, we're all living off of the abundance that was created 80 years ago. All of that hard work, the sacrifice, the blood that was shed for freedom and freedom to be able to build this system, all the hard work that went into building the manufacturing base, all the hard work that went into building the capital base, the balance sheets that allow us to live in high debt today. And so we're living off the benefits, but with no relation to that. And now we're paying the price for it.
And if I take you back to one of the things you said about Germany, we're hearing from people on the ground in Germany that they are starting to look for other places to live. They're starting to leave the country.
Yeah, leaving.
And a lot of people in Europe are experiencing the same thing. It looks like, and I know you've done an episode about the whole refugees topic around the world, and Europe is suffering also from a lot of refugees. So maybe we want to touch on that, because Germany is an interesting case. It's doing what it's doing to its people. A lot of it has been driven, apart from the energy war, the global energy war that's happening, from also the green agenda and how they want to introduce new sources of energy to the country because some global powers told them that that's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I think it goes back to Kissinger. We talked about him last night. And, you know, Henry Kissinger said that, you know, control the food, control the people, control the energy, control the continent, control the money, control the world.
Yes.
So those are three attack vectors. And we can just look, it doesn't take a lot of examination to see that those are the attack vectors. So control the food, control the people. So here we are in the Netherlands right now, which is the number two food exporter in the world. Per the UN, there's 868 million people facing starvation in the next 24 months. That's about one out of every eight people in the world. So we should try to get more food to them, I would think, if you care about that. Mm-hmm. And here we are trying to shut down the number two food exporter. And this isn't just in the Netherlands. This is happening all over. As a matter of fact, in the United States, John Kerry, the climate czar, is running around now saying we need to shut down the farm, shut down agriculture. It's the greatest threat to humanity, et cetera. Well, no, the greatest threat to humanity would be starving. That would be the greatest threat.
Yes.
But so in New Zealand, they're, you know, killing
cows. They're doing it in
So they're doing it everywhere. So the food. And not just that, you know, the WEF has been running campaigns for years saying that we're going to eat less meat. They even have some of the guys, I forget the guy's name specifically, talks about ways that maybe we could introduce like a food allergy that would make people allergic to red meat.
No, I've seen that.
Right.
It's crazy.
And so they're attacking food. They want to take away natural food and give us fake food. So that's food. Obviously the energy. So now we're back to the energy piece, controlling the energy piece. Part of this is that what a lot of it comes down to is that they want to take away all natural stuff and give us all man-made stuff. So it's no longer your natural immunity is any good. Now we need to give you medicine because your natural immunity is not good. No longer is natural food any good, like natural meat. Let's give you fake meat, Beyond Meat. No longer is your natural energy good, natural gas, for example, or oil that comes out of the ground naturally. Never mind that. No, let's give you fake, you know, solar energy or windmill energy, et cetera. And so it's like getting rid of everything that's cheap and abundant and putting us onto things that are scarce and that they can manufacture and make money from.
And the refugees part?
Yeah. So back to the refugees part, you know, these are complex subjects, and you said I was sort of humble. It's like the more that you learn, the more you start to realize, man, there's a lot of moving parts here. There's a lot of pieces to the refugee piece. At the end of the day, we're at a Bitcoin conference. At the end of the day, it's all because the money is broken. That's what it's all about. Because the game of money is rigged, it allows people to use that rigged game to benefit themselves. And then they start to play games with the world, such as let's move people around the continent so we can make more money. So it's all about this ability that to make themselves more money because money is broken in the first place. But it's also because they've created those bad conditions. So, for example, we're talking about the UN saying almost a billion people could starve to death. Well, those billion people don't want to starve to death, it turns out. So they're going to migrate somewhere else. So I think there's two things going on. One, most of these countries, you know, throughout Africa, South America, Middle East, they're completely war-torn, and now they're starving to death. You know, through the Arab Spring, 2011, 2012, it really seemed to kind of come down to when people couldn't eat.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, people can take a lot of abuse, but when you can't feed your family, they say it's a nine meals to anarchy. Nine meals to anarchy. If I don't eat for 3 days, all bets are off sort of a thing. And so a lot of what's happened is that these war-torn countries are starving to death and whatever. So they're moving to try to find a better life, as they should. Now, we'd ask ourselves, why have those countries become so war-torn? And back to the money being broken. Then I think there's also a sinister agenda on top of that, which, again, back to the money being broken. There's a group of people like George Soros, will call him out by name. And I call him out by name specifically because he's made his wealth by breaking countries. Specifically, that's what he does. He famously broke the Bank of England, and he's gone on to tear down many other nations. And when he
taking
does...
taking over layers of...
well, he likes to destroy them so then he can profit on their demise as well as profit rebuilding them. But it sends all those people other places. And so... there's certainly agendas that want to move people around.
Opening borders.
The name of his nonprofit is Open Societies, so it says it in its name. It's not a conspiracy to say that. That's ultimately what he wants. There's conflicting ideas. I should say, like, sort of emotions and thoughts within me. I believe we're all humans. We're all equal, and so everyone should be free to pursue a better life. I certainly feel for those people, but we need to fix the problem. And the underlying problem is that money is broken. And I think it affects that those people might have the better life where they're at. And it takes away the incentives of some of these potential puppet masters, if you will, pulling these strings to also cause us.
I know that a lot of the people that will listen to this would understand probably 80-90% what you're saying. And they'll try to go and maybe research more about refugees now, because you've sparked some interest. What they may not do, and this is why I'm saying what I'm saying, because I want them to go in that direction, is to go research money. Why money is broken. We don't have time to go through the whole conversation now, but I encourage people to go learn
I can say very quickly, to send somebody down that rabbit hole, money is broken because people...
And it's not a conspiracy rabbit hole. This is reality. This is how we live.
In America, Henry Ford, the father of like the modern automobile and really mass manufacturing, Henry Ford, he said, if the American people knew how the banking system worked, there'd be a revolution before the morning.
Exactly.
So not like tomorrow. No. Like before they even wake up, it would happen. Yes. And so that was 100 years ago. It's obviously gotten worse. The money system that we have today is something, it's created this what's called the Cantillon effect. And the Cantillon effect means that whoever's closest to the money supply has the benefit. And so the bankers print themselves money and then they use it to buy assets. The asset prices go higher. By the time you get the money, the prices have gotten higher. The problem is that every time they print themselves more money, the existing money is worth less. Mm-hmm. And so people see asset prices going up, but they don't realize it's actually the value of the money going down. Mm-hmm. And the reason why it's broken is that these people have the ability to print themselves this money. And because of that, there's no consequence or feedback. And so typically, previous to World War I, wars didn't happen as often and they were very short. So if I wanted to go attack you, there was going to be a true cost. And I had to really weigh my odds here, because if I lose, I lose everything. Yeah. I'll lose my whole kingdom.
Yeah.
And even if I do go attack you, it can only happen for a short period of time because we ran out of money. But the fiat money system has allowed these endless wars to go on because I just keep printing my money. And that's a big example, but it happens on the business level, the corporate level, the political level. And you wonder why these politicians never learn. Why do they keep making the same bad mistakes? Like, can't they see it worked out bad? Why would they do that? It's because there's no feedback. There's no skin in the game, right, in there. And it's because the money is broken.
No checks and balances.
Because they're able to print themselves the money. So all throughout history, power has been able to get you wealth. But now wealth is used to create power. And it was never done like that. Sure, strong men could go steal wealth, sure.
Yes.
But they couldn't actually create wealth.
Yes.
And now they can.
And that's why when we're not going to go into it, but I'll just add this point. That's why I say to people that maybe, just maybe, what's happening now in the Middle East, in Israel, Gaza, and maybe other countries that will join this war party, is happening because of the money, is happening because war is a money printing machine. It's a money creation mechanism for those who play the game from very up high. And we saw what happened to the stocks of the military industrial complex in the US the moment Israel, Gaza started fighting, right? Lockheed Martin and all the other ones, all green going up.
Well, they gave money to Palestine.
Yes.
And now they're giving money to Israel.
Yes.
They're giving money to both sides. And this is the history of the banking system. And if you go back to World War I, it was J.P. Morgan that was funding both sides of the war, right? He was the one profiting from this. This is fact. This is history. And so, and I think it's an important piece of history, because if you look, like, J.P. Morgan was giving money to France and England to fight Germany in World War I. He was selling their war bonds. He was raising money for them. And then not only would he give them the money, once they got the money, they had to buy things with the money.
Yes.
So then they would give the money back to him, and he would procure all the stuff and then ship it back to them. So he was double dipping. He would give them the money, and then they'd give the money back to him. He'd buy the stuff. So not only did he, like, again, profit on both sides. And then if you look at world going into World War One, France and England were losing that war. But the problem is that J.P. Morgan had loaned them all this money. And if they lose the war, how does he get paid back?
They have to win it.
So they had to win it. So he had to get the United States in on the war.
Mm-hmm.
But how does he get the United States in the war? They don't want to get in the war. So he bought all the media companies in the United States, started to change the narrative in the U.S. Then he lobbied the politics, and he made the ships that were going back and forth, taking all the stuff, the supplies over there. He changed the military where they had to take all their signs off, all their flags off. And at the time, the German U-boats, the submarines were going around the ocean. And then they changed the policy where boats had to start ramming, had to attack U-boats or submarines on site. And because the ships didn't have insignias on them, they didn't know which ones were merchant ships, which ones were warships. And the Germans sunk a merchant ship and a bunch of Americans died.
That's a good enough reason to go
into
war.
And that pulled the Americans into the war, and then Germany lost, right? And the reason why that's important to understand is because J.P. Morgan has now committed over $60 billion to Ukraine. And if Ukraine loses, how do they get paid back?
So that's one of my hypotheses, that the Ukraine-Russia engine is slowing down, almost finishing, and we need another war to continue powering that. And we talked about Iran last night, and you asked me about the game with Iran. I think they're just trying to pull Iran into another big war because they need another war. They need to keep pumping that money machine.
Yeah.
It's a possibility.
Well, it's not just a possibility. I think the president before JFK, or John F. Kennedy, who got assassinated, yes. Our last president got assassinated. The president before him was Eisenhower.
Yes.
And when he left, typically when people step down or on their deathbed, they kind of have this moment of like truth or whatever, honesty that comes out. And on his address to the American people on national television, yes. He said, the greatest threat we face is this military-industrial complex. He warned us. And JFK came in and talked about the intelligence community, said I'll splinter them to 1,000 pieces is what he said. And then, of course, they assassinated. So we've known about this for a long time. This is not a conspiracy. And it only takes just a tiny bit of rational thought. Businesses are in business to make a profit. The goal of a business is to grow my profits. And so if I make military equipment, then turns out
I need to use it somewhere.
I need military equipment to have demand. I need a type of conflict. And so it's not a conspiracy. That's just how the world works, unfortunately. Yeah.
Okay, good, good, good. I'm happy we said this. Talk to me a bit about your book, co-authored with Alex Vetsky,
yeah.
The Uncommunist Manifesto.
Yeah.
A message of hope, responsibility, and liberty for all. That's the subtitle on Amazon. People can get it. Tell me about the book a bit.
You know, I grew up at a time in America where we still learned about communism. we still had the Cold War with Russia. And so at that time, when I grew up, we learned that communism was bad. We learned why communism was bad. We learned the horrors of that. I remember as a kid thinking how bad that was, how they put up a wall in Berlin and there was an east and west. And oh my gosh, what if I was on the wrong side of the wall and I got trapped? And I remember that growing up. We don't teach that anymore today, right? And now we teach Marxism. As a matter of fact, I would bet most university professors are Marxist. They just don't know it.
They don't know it.
They don't know it. They're not. They're not.
It's not called that way.
It's not called it that, right? And so, anyway, you know, I sort of grew up under this world, knowing that, and I've spent a lot of my time researching communism and Marxism, and a lot even in Karl Marx. I'm sort of regretfully admitting that I actually never read the Communist Manifesto. So I read a lot about communism and Marxism, but never actually read the book. In 2020, when we had the rise of BLM, the leaders of BLM came out and said that we are trained Marxists. That's what they said, openly admitting this. So, you know, for me, what I like to always do, and what I recommend everybody listening, don't just take our word for it. Go fact check this. When I do my videos on my channel, I try to bring as many receipts as I can. But I believe that we should go to the source and hear directly from the source, not what somebody said about the source. Yeah. Let's go directly. So I read Klaus Schwab's books. I want to hear from his source.
The Great Reset.
The Great Reset and the Fourth Industrial Revolution. So anyway, I went back and I read after BLM said they were trained Marxists. I'm like, well, what is Marx? Let's go back and read it. So I read the book. This is 2020. And I read it and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, does anybody actually know what this book says? Because how could anyone be okay with it? I just thought right off the bat, like, if women read this book, they wouldn't be for Marxism. Like, women are communal property. Okay. They know that, right? Like, to summarize, communism, one statement is abolition of private property. Okay. Like, people in America want that. So anyway, I read the book and I was just like shocked, like, wow. And I thought, man, if we could shine some light on this, maybe it would like wake some people up. And I was actually down in El Salvador on a trip down there where they're setting up the Bitcoin beach down there. And I was with Alex Fetsky and I said, hey, have you ever read it? And he said, no, I never did either. And, I said, we should write a rebuttal to this. And so we did. We didn't actually write a rebuttal. We didn't like go tit for tat. We just wrote a better version of it.
Yes.
Almost like if you looked at the book in a mirror.
Yes.
And, to kind of what you said, right. It's like, it's a message of hope. And really we're hoping, we're trying to encourage people to be better versions of themselves and see the world a little bit differently.
Yeah.
I thought it was written at a very unique moment in time because of what happened with the pandemic and this sort of rise of authoritarianism. We promoted the book pretty hard. I think we sold about 30,000 copies. It kind of stalled out as we were talking about last night. Probably need to kind of get that going because it's so important. It's sort of like the zeitgeist of this time.
Yes.
And one of the things that we highlighted, for example, is in the Communist Manifesto, Karl Marx writes 10 points of communism. In order to have a communist nation, there's 10 things that must happen. And a lot of people look at them at America and say capitalism has failed.
Yeah.
Well, capitalism has failed. Per the 10 points of communism, the United States has 7 of those 10. So is America capitalist or communist? Well, quantitatively, we have a 10 points. Quantitatively, it's actually more communist. Like, for example, here we are talking about the money being broken. Point number 5 is all means of money and credit in the hands of the government, central banks. So yes. The central bank is communist.
It is in its essence.
In its essence. All education, free education for all, right? That's public education. So many, a heavy progressive tax system. So these are all communist ideas.
People must read the book. I have to read the book because you're creating so much content and I'm your student.
Yeah.
I keep watching you instead of reading the book, but I have to read the book as well.
And
I'm on your newsletter as well, which is an amazing source.
One thing we did that I think was really good is, I'll just break this one idea down. So people think like capitalism has failed, but we don't have capitalism. They say, well, it's crony capitalism. Well, crony capitalism or corporatism is fascism. That's not capitalism. And so in the original Communist Manifesto, he broke down all these different versions of communism.
Yes.
So what we did is we broke down all these different versions of what people call capitalism, and we kind of dissected each one. I thought that was pretty good. And then one core concept that we have is that we made that Karl Marx framed up that there's a struggle between rich and poor. That's what he framed up. Today we have neo-Marxism or cultural Marxism, and there's a struggle between everybody. What we framed up is the real struggle, the real axis of struggle is actually between the individual and the collectivist. It's between me and you as people and the government that wants to co-opt that.
Yes.
That's the real struggle. And we sort of framed it up that capitalism, and we redefined this word, capitalism is natural and emergent. So what it is it's private property. And as humans have creativity and ingenuity, we try to become more efficient with the scarce resources that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So it's emergent. So for example, I have kids, and when the kids were in preschool, they're trading chips for crackers.
Yes.
Like that's just what we do.
Naturally.
We just naturally trade. That's capitalism.
Yes.
I started a fire. You killed an animal. Hey, cook your animal on my fire.
Yes.
Right. And so it's private property. You have your private property, and we collectively work together to progress. So it's not a political modality. It's not a version of politics.
Yeah.
So what we argued, and we drew a diagram, is that all politics is over here. And in politics, there's a left and a right. However you define that, fascism is right somehow and socialism is left. They're both centrally planned, you know, collectivist ideas. We argue that capitalism is way over here.
Yes.
It's not in this. And so if you think about it in that
lens,
it's
a different dimension.
It's a different dimension. And so really capitalism is natural and emergent, and all of politics, whether it's left or right, is more like a parasite. And the parasite attaches itself to this capitalist society to extract wealth.
Yes.
And the goal of a parasite is not to kill the host.
No,
and
if it's you look to live off of it.
It's to live off the host. But if you look at like the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, Hitler, Mao's Great Leap Forward in China, they killed the host.
Yes.
It went too far.
Yes.
Now, Mao's Great Leap Forward was killing the host in China. And in the 80s, they lightened up and they brought in more capitalism. And now they've almost found like this balance of the maximum amount of wealth extraction without completely killing it.
And this to me is the manifestation of that to me is the modern world in the Western world where we are taught to believe that we need to work in order to pay the taxes, in order to pay the mortgage, in order to live in this difficult life. But does it have to be that way?
Yeah.
Do we exert our powers and our energies for the sake of someone else to get rich, or do we really sustain ourselves?
Yeah.
And I think we also feel that with COVID in the past 3 years, I think a lot of where I meet your ideas is in the sovereignty as well. It's the emerging power of capitalism. I totally get that. I think it also goes back to the natural power of sovereignty, that people want to develop an independence and a sense of trust in themselves and what they can produce, what they can create in the world, and how they can sustain their loved ones and the people around them. That is also natural, and it's creation. And so COVID came to disrupt that in a way and to tell us, no, 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 you're not safe on your own. You don't trust yourself, trust someone else. We know better. And also give us your powers and allow us to set the rules and the mandates for you. We will dictate.
That's also Marxism.
That, of course. And that's yeah. Like taking another step
right.
forward and accelerating that Marxism, I'd say.
Yeah.
And then people get confused and think that that's for the better of society. That's the hoax about it. Like they manipulate people to think that this is, you're doing something good if you're going along that path, rather than taking care of yourself and thinking for yourself and, you know, and creating stuff on
the
your
problem own. Is, I say, I think I don't know. I think I came from like a Spider-Man movie, but like with great freedom comes great responsibility.
Yeah.
And so these aren't like linear black and white issues. And so there's a lot of nuance in there. And unfortunately, most people aren't able to think with nuance. Yes. And so I want to be individual and I want to be thinking for myself. Mm-hmm. But morally, I also want to think about other people. Yeah. And so like we as humans, we work in our own self-interest, as all animals do as well. We don't want to die. So as animals, as humans, we're motivated by surviving and procreating.
Yes.
That's what we do. Animals are the same way. But where my interests align with your interests, we work together.
Mm-hmm.
I have a fire, you have an animal. Hey, let's work together in this. Hey, there's an enemy attacking both of us. Let's get together. But it all starts with the individual. A great book everyone should read. It's Murray Rothbard's book, Anatomy of the State. It's like a booklet, and it helped motivate us to keep our booklet very short.
Mm-hmm.
So, Uncommunist Manifesto is about 10,000 words. It's like an hour, hour and a half read. Anatomy of the State is also, but it breaks down sort of what the state is, and there is no state. The state
is an idea,
and it's made up of individuals.
Yes.
Right. And, you know, you mentioned kind of going back to us being independent and us wanting to do these things. Well, that's what the world needs,
mm-hmm.
because the world needs people to do things. The world needs people to invent things, to solve problems, to create value for each other. And if we're all turned into sort of this like dependent class, then who's going to advance the world forward? Right.
Exactly.
So I think they can both be true. We should all be individuals looking out for our own self-interest, working together collectively when our interests align. But that doesn't mean that you can't be compassionate and still help other people. So those aren't mutually exclusive.
Exactly.
But the state wants
both.
You can hold both, but the state wants to legislate this morality.
Yes.
They want to legislate that I'll steal your wealth to help some poor people out.
Yes.
And then what happens is, if you're a parent or if you've experienced this in your own life, you'll realize that the greatest joy you can get in life is by helping other people. It's not the pursuit of your own happiness. That's empty happiness, right? When you help other people genuinely, it's the greatest joy you can get. And also, if you've ever been the recipient of maybe some needed help that you needed, like you felt gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is if I give to somebody, I feel amazing. You've received it. You feel grateful. But when the state gets involved, they short circuit that whole thing because now they've stolen from me. So now I'm angry.
Mm-hmm.
And now they've given to you, now you're entitled.
Ugh,
And so
that breaks the paradigm,
the whole
the
paradigm.
natural
Yeah.
paradigm. Okay, good. Do you think the WEF and other globalist powers are trying to pull societies into Marxism these days?
Well, certainly. I mean, they're certainly doing that, right? The WEF has stated goals, and it's basically, I don't, I want to say Marxism rebranded, but it's almost not even rebranded. So, Klaus Schwab pounds the table on what he calls a public-private partnership. What does that mean?
Fascism.
Public governments and private businesses working together, which is corporatism or fascism or whatever you want to call it. Fascism used to be a bad word, right? So,
Yeah.
like, that's what he's literally calling for. He calls it stakeholder capitalism, if you will. So, in stakeholder capitalism is no longer capital. So, again, we define capitalism in the book as private property, and then using that private property for efficiency and cooperation. But he calls it stakeholder capitalism, which means that you don't have your private property. Now, everybody who has a stake in what you may or may not do actually has the power and control. And so, well, who are the stakeholders? Well, this is governments and this is
Big
other
tech.
businesses and big tech. They're stakeholders. And so what they've done is now they've, using ESG scores and DEI scores, they've put a quantitative metric of how they can now regulate you. And so that's just Marxism, right? It's centralizing
100%.
the means of production in the hands of the state or the state body. And what they've gone on to do is, so they say that you'll own nothing and be happy. Well,
Yes.
Karl Marx wrote in the Communist Manifesto, to summarize communism in one statement is the abolition of private property. It's a direct quote. So communism, you'll have no property. The WEF says you'll own nothing, be happy. I mean, it's the exact same thing, just rebranded. And like I said, not even really rebranded. It's just the same thing.
Yeah. Just without calling it Marxism in the
The
book.
infuriating thing is that I guess, I think it was Mark Twain said that those that don't know history are bound to repeat it. And we don't have to look into ancient history. Like, as I mean, in our lifetime, in China, in the 40s and 50s, we saw potentially 50 million people die at the hands of communism. Just in this last century,
Yeah.
over 100 million people have died because of this. So if you would just take the time to think about this and discuss it openly, you would understand it wouldn't work, and you could understand why it wouldn't work. But we also have at least three, well, not even really, we have even more than that, but between Russia, Germany and China, 100 million people have died. But even right now today, look at North and South Korea. Just look at those two. It's the same continent, the same people, the same ideology, everything. You just put a line down the middle, and there's two different political ideologies, and one flourishes, one doesn't. In Germany, again, I referenced earlier, they put the Berlin Wall. I mean, these are the two best AB examples that you could ever have,
Yeah.
because you literally took the same people and and just put a line down the middle. And so we have all these examples. Like, it doesn't take deep thought; it just takes a little bit of retrospect
And humility to admit.
and humility to admit. So certainly the WEF is trying to do that.
And
And
where do you
really,
think they're taking us? Like, what's their vision, that technocratic new world order that they're trying to
yeah.
create?
So technocratic, right? So technocracy, where we must rely on experts,
Yes.
right? Klaus Schwab is very open about the fact that he thinks that we should no longer be voting. People don't know what they want, which is partly true. And you have to listen to this with some nuance, but unfortunately, most people probably shouldn't vote because they don't know. They haven't even taken the time to understand issues. Everyone should have the right to vote, but
Yeah.
if you don't know what you're doing, you probably should just abstain. That's sort of my opinion on it. Now, I want everyone to get educated. I'm not saying we should take away, Klaus says we should take away the right. I'm not saying we should take away the right, but he is right that most people don't know. So he's openly admitting that. He wants the world to be run by this technocracy, these technocrats. Which is Marxist. So, for example, Hitler wrote this book, Mein Kampf, and in the book he talks about how he couldn't get the Germans to kind of rally behind him moving forward until he went and learned the language of the Marxist. And when he came up with the language of the Marxist, he was able to get them and move them forward. Okay, so then what's the language of the Marxist? Well, they use this thing called the dialectic. So this dialectic is the way that they talk about things. And it's specifically used to push their agenda, specifically to push us into this technocracy. So of experts. So, for example, James Lindsay used this, Dr. James Lindsay, he's the expert in this. So if you're interested, go listen to him. But like, they would say that like a red and a green apple are basically the same thing because they're both apples. Okay, well, they are both apples, but they are different. Well, then they would say, well, then oranges and apples are basically the same thing because they're both fruit. Men and women are basically the same thing because we're both humans. Yes, that is true, but the nuance, the difference means everything.
Yeah.
And what happens is they do that to blur the lines of things. I got into sort of almost a little heated debate last week with someone talking about, I think that we should protect babies. And he says, well, then how can you be okay with the death penalty? Because they're both humans. I'm like, whoa. Like, that's not the same thing. You're talking about a little baby right here that needs to be protected versus someone who's brutally raped and like. But that I told him, I said, look, you're using the language of the Marxists. You just don't know this.
Yes.
But they've done this to blur all these lines, so we don't know anymore. And specifically, in the United States, there was this black lady, Kenanja Brown or whatever. They were. Put it before a committee to bring her into, and they said, do you know what the definition of a woman is? And she's like, no, I'm not a biologist. And what she's saying is, I don't know. I need to consult an expert.
Yes.
A technocracy.
Yes.
And so that's what this is achieving.
Sad.
Where we don't even know the difference of an orange and an apple anymore.
And in the money front, they're taking us to a CBDC, central bank digital currency world.
And then there's a CBDC thing. And so so part of the technocracy is that and the CBDC and really the end game, if you will, is total control. It always has been. Marxism is always centralizing the means of power and production in the hands of the government. And so what they want to do is they want everything to have permission. And so it doesn't take a lot of thinking, but most people don't have this, that if I must have permission, then that permission could also be taken away. Now, right now, the permission is only to keep bad guys out. But what if I'm on the wrong side all of a sudden?
Yes.
And so how do you know which side that you're on? And so in the UN, they have these 17 Sustainable Development Goals, SDGs, 16.
As part of Agenda 2030. If you don't Agenda know it, go to the UN website.
And so this
UN
is
website.
On the UN website. Yeah. Again, don't just go look it up. Go on the UN website and look at the Sustainable Development Goals. Number 16 specifically is digital IDs. And so they say that it's, in the UN language, they've been very clear to start using the word human right and not inalienable right. You see, inalienable rights is written in our founding documents in the United States, is that we have rights that were given to us by our creator. Human rights are ones that have been given to us by humans.
It's more in the natural law versus.
Right. So they use the word human rights, and they say that IDs are a human right.
Mm-hmm.
And so every baby, everyone needs to have an ID. Which sounds great. I mean, I guess, like, why not? Well, but then if I don't have the ID, then I am not allowed to participate in society. Now, going back to the WEF for a minute, famously, I'm sure everybody listening has probably heard, you know, you'll own nothing, be happy. I referenced it earlier. Where did that come from? It came from an article that this Ida Auken had written. She used to be with, I think, Belgium, and now she's with the WEF, I think it was. And in the story, she said, the year's 2030. I have no privacy. I own nothing, and life has never been better.
She painted this picture.
She painted this story of I have no privacy. So even my thoughts and my dreams are being read. And this is in Klaus Schwab's book, The Fourth Industrial Revolution, where basically all our thoughts go into this giant AI cloud.
I wrote an article about it, about mind control, chips and whatever.
So the part that I want to talk about, though, specifically is she says I feel bad for those people living outside the wall. They don't have all of this that we have today. So what she's talking about is this secondary class of people who haven't taken the digital ID and don't use the CBDCs, and they're not allowed to participate in society. That's what she's talking about. And so that's the view, vision that they have for us. It's written in the goals, and that's what it means.
Which leads me naturally to talk about Bitcoin and freedom.
Yeah.
So,
well, we're at the Bitcoin. So conference.
And this ties in nicely also with, you know, a lot of my audience is quite an awake audience to what's happening around the world these days, and they want to know how to prepare for what's coming. So, please give them some of your thoughts about Bitcoin freedom.
We talked about the money being broken.
Yes.
I think of it like this giant tree, and maybe this giant oak tree with like 1,000 leaves, and every leaf is like a problem in society. The obesity rate, the incarceration rate, the homelessness rate, and every single leaf is a problem.
Yeah.
And then all of that is on a tree, and at the base, the root of that is the money print. So we talk about fix the money, fix the world, so to speak, right? And so we want to fix that. But also, I think the way I look at it is that really every freedom in life really comes down to the freedom to transact. So freedom of speech, well, we're transacting value, we're transacting speech. So it really comes down to the freedom to transact. And so if they can stop that, which is why control the money, control the world.
Yes.
If they can stop me from transacting, they can take away all my freedom. In the United States, we have a constitution that guarantees freedom, like freedom of assembly.
Yes.
Number one.
Yes.
However, if I can't pay to put gas in my truck, how do I go to the assembly?
Yeah.
If I can't buy food when I get there, how do I go there? If I can't get a hotel room, right? So everything basically hinges on that. And so they want to control that. Now they do a pretty good job. A central bank digital currency will be the next step, because certainly now the government can freeze your bank account. They froze Russia's bank accounts.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly they can do that, but it takes a lot of work. With CBDCs, they can program it in advance. So I think it's just a lot more control. Now, what do we do about it? How do we protect ourselves? Well, the map is already laid out for us. We don't have to reinvent the wheel here. I like to look at the fall of the USSR. So when you look through the rise of the USSR and the fall of it, you'll see that life became so oppressive, became so authoritarianism. They didn't have the technology we have today, but it became so oppressive that people really couldn't live. I mean, 25 million people starved to death. And so they had to go start working outside of the system. I can't speak for every other country. I would imagine most of Europe is worse than the United States, but you can't do anything without a permit anymore.
Yes.
I can't even have a party at the park for my kid without getting a permit.
You can't put a tent up on the beach in Israel without a permit.
Yeah, so everything requires a permit. And if I don't have a permit, technically I'm in the black market.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
So what happened is it became so burdensome and so heavy and so regulated, and everything had to have permission, that people had to start working outside the system.
Yes.
Hey, you put price controls on bread, so I can't make bread, so we'll sell bread on the black market. Now, here's a real story. In California, this is how insane California's gotten. They're banning natural gas in the state. So in the United States, natural gas is so abundant and so cheap that in most of the U.S., we don't even capture it. It just leaks. In Europe, it's desperately needed. But we have so much. It's so cheap. We don't even bother to capture it. Okay. It's our most abundant, cheap source of fuel.
Resource.
In California, our energy, our electricity prices are more than double the rest of the country. So in some parts of the country, like Texas, it's 8 cents per kilowatt, 8 cents per hour. In California, it's up to 60 cents, okay? Every summer, our electricity grid goes down. We're having to shut power down. We don't have enough electricity. They've shut down our nuclear reactors. They've shut down the natural gas. And now what they're doing is now they're banning natural gas from even being used in homes. And they're making everyone use electricity, which we don't even have enough of.
Oh, my God.
Okay. So we have gas in our homes still, because they don't make you take it out. You just can't add new homes with it. No new homes can add it. So we have a fireplace that burns wood.
Yes.
I wanted to have my fireplace burn natural gas. So we drilled a hole. We ran the gas in there. And so we go online to buy gas logs for the fireplace. No one will ship them to California.
No way.
My wife had to go on to Craigslist, which is like a peer-to-peer thing.
Yes.
She had to drive 30 minutes away and meet someone in a back alley and do a cash deal to get gas logs.
What, like, is he taking people? Exactly, like, USSR.
And so that's black market. So we literally had to move to the black market in order to get something that we needed. Okay, so this is the point. So in the USSR, just like that, people had to move to this black market to get bread, to get whatever. And what happens is, if we're having a party and we start kicking people out, eventually all those people go start their own party and we have no more control over them. So when people exit the system, when people exit the monetary system, the political system, the market system, there's the state has no more control over them. So during the USSR, all these people started leaving to create parallel markets. Okay. And when that happened, the state lost all the power. They couldn't manipulate them. They couldn't control them. And they eventually crumbled and fell.
Yes.
And two things happened. One, it crumbled and fell. But two, when that happened, it cushioned the blow, because there was already all these parallel markets that were set up. And so the answer for us is that I think, you know, as of now, and I think what we should do before it becomes violent is peacefully just
exit the system.
Exit the system.
And Bitcoin.
And we can do that. So we can exit the system with Bitcoin right now. We don't have to participate in that system. And so they want to continue to print more money and inflate our money away. Well, we don't have to use that money. We don't have to use it. We don't have to operate in that system. So it's
apart from maybe taxing and whatever, which we still have to participate in.
Sure.
If we're, you know.
Well, maybe.
Citizens in a state. Yeah.
Maybe. But sure. So sell some Bitcoin and pay or whatever. But
yeah.
The point is that what I think we should all be doing is trying to set up more parallel systems.
Exactly.
So, hey, you're not happy with Bud Light using a transvestite as their spokesperson. Great. Then start a beer company that's the opposite of that. A great example, Ben Shapiro's company, Daily Wire. Jeremy Bowen is one of the founders of that. They were sponsored by this Harry's Razor, and Harry's Razors got mad at Ben Shapiro because he said men couldn't get pregnant. And so they said, we're going to pull your sponsorship. He said, you know what? Actually, we're going to cancel your sponsorship. And instead of Harry's Razors, we're going to create Jeremy's Razors. And if you go to the website, it's called Jeremy's Razors. And it says, stop giving your money to woke corporations that hate you.
But,
and so, but we need more of that, right. That allows us to vote with our feet.
Yes.
And so I think I'm a capitalist. So I think through competition, through free markets, the ultimate vote is with our money and maybe our feet. And so I think entrepreneurs should stand up, create these parallel markets. And Bitcoin, back to the freedom to transact, underpins all of that. So they're going to try to shut that down. But we have Bitcoin. And I think that's really our most peaceful way to change the world right now.
And for people listening in my audience that don't know Bitcoin well enough and should know it by now, it cannot be shut down.
Right.
People think, I mean, they can try and manipulate in some ways, but it cannot be shut down.
They right? could try to manipulate the US dollar value or whatever dollar
yes,
value
yes,
of it
which
is.
Will
but they
try to sustain people from coming into it.
Right.
But they can't shut it down.
Right.
They'll have to shut the whole internet forever. And that will shut down life, I guess.
Yeah, which is like a 0% chance of happening.
Exactly.
So it's theoretically impossible to shut down. And for people that don't know, the reason why it moves peer to peer. So it's like cash, but it can be done over the internet.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. If anyone's not following Mark on YouTube, do it. 500K followers by now. Twitter. Sign up to his most wonderful newsletter almost every day. I can't keep up with the amount
one,
of
one,
content
one
you
big
got
piece a week.
Create.
One big piece a week, and then I send out little ones, yeah, for like videos
Can
and things
you
like that.
Best, please, I don't. But there's so much happening around
yeah.
the world. You just have so much content to talk about.
Yeah.
The pace of things right now is so accelerated.
Yeah. Probably about 50% of it's kind of more macroeconomic. Focused
yes.
about 50% of it, and the other half is more sort of freedom, geopolitical stuff.
Where can people sign up to the newsletter?
Yeah, just go to onemarkmoss.com.
Exactly.
And everything's linked there. So all my social media is linked there. All my YouTube channels are linked there, etc.
Onemarkmoss.com.
It's the number one.
Number one.
Yep.
What's your final message? A message to drive people to action, but give them some hope.
Yeah, you know what I like to say. What I like to end it with is. One, I'm bullish on humanity. I'm bullish on human ingenuity. When I say bullish, I'm optimistic, right? I'm optimistic on what happens when a million entrepreneurs are backside or against the wall. I'm optimistic on human freedom.
Yes.
But we have a tough road ahead of us because we have a very powerful group of people who want to take that freedom away from us and want to control us and want to enslave us. And unfortunately, they have almost enough technology to do that in a way that could potentially break the cycle of this sort of freedom revolution cycle that we've seen throughout history. I think we win, but it's not guaranteed. And so I just like to tell everybody, like, we have to do the work back to sort of what we started out with, starting brush fires in the minds of men. Don't just listen and watch this or read this or whatever, however you're getting it. Go discuss it.
Yes.
Go talk about it with your friends, your families, your coworkers. We have to continue to spread this information. Two, we need to do something about it. So I think back to my father was in Vietnam. My grandfather was in World War II. The founding fathers of the United States, they gave their life for freedom. And luckily for us, we're not asked to do that right now. But you know, think about World War II. There's the famous, you know, the storming the beaches of Normandy, and these soldiers, 18-year-old kids, were literally running, storming the beaches as their friends were getting blown up around them, but they continued moving forward. And today we're just required to speak up.
Yeah.
That's all. We don't have to die, but like, don't be afraid to speak
some
up.
Some of my friends do, unfortunately.
Some of your friends had to die. And yeah, I don't want to be insensitive to that. You're right.
I'm just saying because it's a reality these days.
It's a reality, but I think we all need to be willing to make a sacrifice.
Yes.
And some of us might have to give the final sacrifice, which is unfortunate. But we all need to sacrifice our time, our effort, our energy, and probably even our money.
Yeah.
Even our money.
Yeah.
So maybe I need to start that business or support that business, even though it's more expensive or whatever. I'm going to do it anyway
because
I'm willing to give
me in the right direction.
I'm willing to give money.
Yes.
Willing to give my time, effort, energy. So I say build the world that we want. Like,
yes.
Stop being a victim. If you want the world to be different, then you should go do something about it. We talked about politics last night.
Yes.
I don't want to do it. You don't want to do it. But someone does. Someone has to do that.
Yes.
And so we need to give our time, effort, energy, and our money to go build the world we want. And
love
only
it.
If we do that, which I'm optimistic we will, but only if we do that will we get the world we want. Otherwise, we're going to get someone else's world.
And stop and look and see what is your inner calling. Where is this taking you? When you're listening to this, what is it calling you to do? Go inwards, check with yourself. What can you create?
Yeah.
And start following that path.
Yeah.
And this is an amazing conversation, Mark.
Yeah, it was fun.
Thank you so much. I learn from you all the time, every time I speak to you, every time I watch you, whether you're with me or just with me on the screen. So I really appreciate this conversation. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's fun.
And thanks for joining us. Ciao.